Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon with JB.
Hello, Timothy.
On an antique chaise long.
Yeah, that's right.
With Phil.
Hello, Tim.
On an antique chair, which, JB, do you want to tell him at the start of the pod?
Do not rock on my chair, please.
No, do not rock on my...
antique chair.
Do not rock on my antique chair.
I couldn't remember if it was do not or do rock on your antique chair.
Definitely don't. Definitely
do not.
Don't.
Okay.
Do that.
Yes. Thank you.
And I'm Tim. We are here in the Rugby Dungeon to bring you another roundup of another week in the world of rugby. And a lot going on,
yeah.
On and off the pitch.
Top of the table looks spicy.
So does the front and back... Well, the front pages of the rugby paper and the back pages of other newspapers tomorrow.
Some huge news.
Some big stories bumbling around. Also, and here's a little thing. On this podcast, you are going to hear... Because he hasn't told us yet, but all we know is that JB, for the first time in his playing career...
In 25 years or however long I played this game, something happened to me yesterday which never happened to me before.
Ooh, shall we finish the tease there?
No. Tell us what the thing was.
Okay.
And then because then everyone's up to speed with me and Phil.
I got a red card.
Right.
Ooh,
he hasn't told
dirty,
us.
Dirty.
I know.
He hasn't told us why.
I got a red
yet.
Card in club rugby.
What would you guess it's for, Phil? I reckon it'll be for a cheap shot.
Definitely an Owen Farrell style no arm tackle, no arm shot.
Baz!
Yeah.
Running into contact. No, it wasn't that. Okay. But I'll tell you all about it later.
All right. Okay. So we'll get into the games that have happened this weekend. There has been a fair little bit of news. And I think we should start with the speculative news. So I'm using news in inverted commas because it's only the very early stages of this, but the rugby paper seem to have stolen a march on other journalists and written a story suggesting that the Six Nations broadcast rights, which are currently up for tender, will not be obligated by the Six Nations to be partly or at all free to air. And consequently, the speculation is that Sky will win that deal and BBC and ITV, and therefore free to air Six Nations coverage could come to an end.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is... I will just say, before we get into the goods and bads, reading that, it does come across, that specific article, it does come across as very speculative. It's hinged on the premise that the current deal, which runs to 2021, next year, was a joint deal for ITV and BBC, who, according to the article, outbid Sky in 2016 for that five-year period. The article then says, but doesn't give... any reference to who said it, says that this time round ITV and BBC will not be allowed a joint deal, and that is the kind of cornerstone of the speculation that Sky will take
it. So it looks like it will be beyond the means of the BBC, possibly beyond the what ITV would be prepared to spend, because the current deal is £50 million. I think that's per year or a total deal. I don't know, whatever it is. Whether it's total deal or per year, I don't know. So you'll have to look at the numbers yourself. But just it will be by a factor of six larger. 300 million is speculated amount that it could go for, because, as well as Six Nations, it will be packaged up with Autumn Internationals, pre-World Cup warm-ups, and the like.
Which is, as I mentioned last week, Project Light.
Yeah, this is the 100...
This is it.
The 100 international matches that have been packaged up and are being
sold. So they've
got
9 different packages. They all go out to market. If they don't sell, they come back, they get repackaged, they go out to market again. And this process will continue. And this is what I raised last week in terms of, is it dangerous for Premier Rugby and the Pro 14 if their rights go to market at the same time. And as you just said there, Tim, if it's an increase of, what, six times?
Potentially sixfold.
I mean, if you're a broadcaster, how much money have you got left in the coffers for everything else?
Well, it depends. So it does depend how many of those games get bought by one person. So if Sky, as is being speculated by the Rugby paper, if Sky buy everything...
Like they did with the cricket. So with the cricket, they just came and bought the whole lot.
Everything.
So yeah. they bought international cricket.
Yep.
If one organisation buys everything, everyone else wants a piece of that pie. Everyone else has got money left in the coffers to buy something else.
Yeah.
If it's not, it could be everyone has a little bit of the international game, no one has all of it.
I'm not particularly optimistic that the Premiership via CVC goes to market and gets the deal that they think they will. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if TV money doesn't grow nearly as fast as they think, but it is supplemented by online revenue. But then the question is, if it's online revenue, why couldn't they just do that on... They didn't need CVC to tell them that there's a potential stream of online revenue. But, yeah, anyway, that's last week's discussion. So, the free-to-air stuff is interesting, because I wonder, why is it taken this thing for people to sound the alarm and say, hang on a minute, this deal isn't actually what we want?
If everyone's been listening to this podcast for a while, you'll understand that we sounded potential alarm bells as soon as CVC bought it, which, generally speaking, I don't think anyone was asking the questions when the deal was first done that they're now asking.
Yeah. I don't think they are asking it. I saw this little bit in the Financial Times about CVC the other day, but I don't think anyone really is asking the questions like, what happens when you've spent all of the capital and you've bought a bunch of new 4G pitches and, you know, you've inflated the player salaries and you've done all this? What happens after that? And then the money runs out, but you've got less income coming in than you did before, or at least broadly the same. And if you're a players' union, if you're the RPA, right, and you see the Premiership, for example, sign a deal next year, which is three or four times bigger than the previous deal, would you expect your salary cap to go up three or four times?
Maybe not three or four times, but you would expect it to go up.
Yeah, so...
You would expect it to go up at a level that is sustainable in line with revenues.
I'll tell you
if the revenues massively increase, yeah.
I'm almost like some sort of moderator here. Let's keep it big picture and keep it Six Nations for a second. How do you feel about losing free-to-air Six Nations?
Well, I don't think it's a big deal, personally, because you don't watch big set-piece internationals usually on your own. And loads of people say, well, I grew up and I watched it. And, yeah, great. Good for you. But generally speaking, the big events like the Lions, which has not been free-to-air for God knows how long, you get together with a group of mates, you go to the pub or you go to a club, and if you really want to watch it, you can go and watch it. Absolutely fine. It's not a big deal. It's not like the club game. I think the club game has suffered a lot by being... Well, it's suffered, and it also has had a lot of investment. It's become more niche. I don't think that is the problem here. I think the problem is, as I mentioned before, the stripping out of the income long-term by selling the commercial rights, and I think they've sold 18% of the commercial rights.
Okay.
For the Six Nations.
Yeah, that's a far bigger issue.
Yeah, no. So we'll get into the financial bit, but sort of almost like on the functional level, eyeballs and all of that, which I think is where most fans' minds are at when they see potentially no more free-to-air Six Nations. Phil?
I'm not too far away from JB in that it is five weekends a year. They are very, very big games. A lot of people, who follow rugby only really follow the Six Nations.
Yeah.
In terms of the overall numbers, like round Six Nations, I work in an industry that, or certainly in a location that's not massively rugby union heavy. The only times that people talk about rugby is when there's a World Cup on, when there's a Lions tour, or during the Six Nations.
Yeah.
Not even Autumn Internationals, people aren't bothered.
They don't even know that they're on.
Yeah, Summer Tours, people aren't bothered. General Premiership and even Champions Cup, people aren't bothered. Six Nations, people care about.
Yes.
So a lot of people will still find ways to watch it. So I'm less concerned that there's going to be long-term damage by the fact that the Six Nations is not going to be free-to-air. And I definitely appreciate the trade-off that if you've got slightly fewer people watching it, but you've got a load more cash coming in, you can do different things.
Yeah.
If you've got a load more cash coming in.
As for the casual fan, this sounds awful, but just from a business point of view, what value are they? So what I mean by that is, you look at some of the things, the comments going around today, which is, oh, well, you know, maybe the casual fan just wants to watch it at home. But if they just watched it at home, they're basically freeloaded. I mean, they're not going to buy a shirt, they're not going to their local club, they're not doing any of that stuff.
Yeah, I suppose this is, you can sort of think of it like, and this is the way that it should be thought about, because this is, you know, take the emotion out for a second, and we're all units, and it's like a sales funnel, isn't it?
Mm.
Like someone who is trying to sell a subscription type or a consultancy might say, hey, here's a free lecture I'll do, come along. And they'll think, I might get some email addresses that might make a mailing list. I might create a sales funnel that ends with more people doing it. So that would be the principle that a lot of people would say, is if you have less people getting it free to air, you're losing a sales funnel, which might convert people to being... I'm not saying I necessarily agree that is the deal with rugby, but that would be
And you also lose the cultural aspect of it too, don't you? Which is the whole nation getting involved.
Yeah,
and that whole day. So there is two sides to this as well. There's the business side with the sales funnel and the consumers. There is also the next generation and getting people actually playing. And you want, there are relatively few people who will turn up at the local rugby club for the first time having never watched a game or not had a family member involved. You need something like that, either TV or family, to get people in and playing the game.
And so just very anecdotally, no one in my family before me ever played rugby.
Likewise.
And it was, I was a very young kid, and my mum says that I would just sit and watch Six Nations games, transfixed. And we moved to Newbury when my folks split up, and we moved to Newbury. And I asked, "Is there a rugby club?" And
who was coaching there at the time?
Ben Ryan. No, that was a few years later. Ben Ryan would have been about 12.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I was that classic thing that Phil's just described. You've got to
unpack the business aspect and the long term growth through getting people into it. Now, one of the interesting ones that people have referred to today as a real negative is the cricket position that was mentioned before. Yeah. Now, I have no idea what the long term attendance numbers or like participation numbers in cricket are. I do know that England have won the World Cup since the TV deal.
Yep.
Now,
and they were world number one in Test cricket as well for a while.
Yeah,
well,
that's probably being a bit flippant because the downturn would take a lot longer to look at.
Both sides of something. They've seen a huge amount of income, like immediately. I can't remember what they bought it for, 250 million or something. I assume that's the number I've got in my head.
These deals are big numbers.
Yeah, so cricket, never seen money like that before, ever. So they've seen that side. But I think cricket fans would say they'd quite like to have some more stuff on, you know, on national broadcasters, which I can kind of understand.
They
that
probably
as well.
Would. Now, I come at this from one sense. I can see the sort of emotional, cultural side that we talked about. I can see the business side. The other side is as a rugby convert who's going to go wherever the games are, because I'm already a unit that is sold on rugby, and I have been my whole life, and I will be my whole life. So, what I would say is, we're going to get a much, much better product.
Yes.
And this is one thing that is overlooked.
Well, if it's Sky and it's Stuart Barnes.
Yeah, I mean, really?
Ooh. Well, okay.
depends who buys it.
If ITV could stump up the cash on their own, I'd be delighted with that.
Yeah.
Because they provide an outstanding product. I mean, my whole career is in broadcasting, and so I don't wish to malign anybody, but...
Some
people do it better than others, and I think some of Sky's coverage, Formula One, you mentioned.
Oh, I cannot.
Coverage is is world class.
Yeah, the coverage of BBC Wales before last year's Wales France game, it was nearly enough for me to turn off the TV. It was it was that bad. I mean, it really was some of the worst. It was worse than Children in Need, and I don't say that lightly. It was awful.
And BT Sport. I think the product you get for Premiership Rugby is
superb.
Is world class as well.
It really is.
Yeah.
Just on that, we might touch on it later, but the nuanced discussion they had on the Rugby Tonight today, Sunday.
Gallagher Premiership Tonight.
It should be Rugby This Evening.
Rugby This Evening.
Rugby Late Afternoon.
Rugby After the Afternoon game.
Yeah, Rugby Late Afternoon. Yeah. We'll call it that.
With Ben Kay, Hugo Monier and Wayne Barnes.
Wayne Barnes,
who was brilliant. Yeah. It was such a... intelligent, well-informed discussion around something that's incredibly complex, but they did it so well. And that's one very easy example.
Yeah, it is actually very very good, that segment.
So I would say that for the people who actually watch, and for us all, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're part of this, we are going to get a better product. Yeah. Whatever happens, because we should get a better product.
Here's where I can't get on board with this. If the Premiership owners want to do a deal with CVC, right, they are all very smart men. I mean, they are in this business of owning rugby clubs because in other businesses they are phenomenally successful. And if they want to do it and throw the money away, it's completely on them. I don't care what they do with their cash. The RFU and the WRU and all the other unions, they don't represent businessmen. They're not privately owned. They are basically, well, they are privately owned, but they're owned by the clubs and the members and the grassroots and everyone else. That's who owns them. And I don't think it is a good idea for them to sell their commercial rights to CVC on the basis which they've done so. Because going forward, that money is there to power clubs, grassroots, and by the way, pay international players, which is very, very important. That money is literally just going to be taken away. So they can say, yeah, we can grow the pie. But for the amount of money you're talking, and I made the argument a few weeks ago, just buying the talent yourself, for the amount of for the amount that you're giving away, go get a loan. You know, this isn't beyond the wit of man, but for whatever reason it is, they've decided CVC is the best way. And the counter argument to CVC is, okay, we get adults in the room that can smash some heads together and make sure he works with him and him he works with him. There's no none of these vested interests that get in the way. I guess that is a fairly powerful point as well. Yeah. But as soon as we sell this 18% of the commercial rights from the Six Nations, we don't get that back. The only person that can sell that will be CVC. And they've done it with Formula One. They've owned part of the rights of Formula One. They've pulled out somewhere between 2 to 3 billion quid's worth of income. They've actually sold it for less than they bought it for.
Because they're satisfied with the return on the income.
Well, whether they're satisfied or not, I think they'd love to get a big uplift, right? But they didn't.
This one is going to rumble, and I think we should keep it big picture, like rather than get diving right into the.
Well, I would just say
diving right into the financials.
If it is the Six Nations, the 4 weeks of rugby on free TV,
five weekends of rugby,
which has upset you, you've missed the wood from the trees here. You need to be upset about the actual deal and the arrangement because it's not good for the unions.
So I'm, based on what I know, I'm still okay with the deal. I'm okay with this position, although this position is potentially going non-free to air, although it is just speculation. So I wouldn't get too worked up about it right now.
No.
Because as the, which article? I think it's the Rugby Pass article on this, Chris Jones's article, says... no tenders have actually been submitted for this yet.
No one
knows yet.
They're still packaging it up.
This could be horse trading still. And my only issue with the whole CVC thing is just that the kind of integrity of the World Cup, which I do think is really, really important to me, the integrity of things like the Lions, which is one of the last bastions of kind of the original amateur style rugby and tours and everything, and I want to keep those to keep their integrity, and the only way those are going to keep their integrity if we don't go down this route of an annual World League type thing.
Yeah, well, that's the only other alternative, I think.
Yeah, which I think that's what they want.
Well,
that's what they're still going to. I'm absolutely sure that CVC is still going to pursue that as an end goal.
Isn't that World Rugby's stance?
Yes,
I thought that was World Rugby's bait to stop the CVC stuff.
Oh, I see.
That's what it would
make sense. So that it might have been World Rugby's, but from either aspect, if you're purely looking at it for TV revenues, that is the most marketable product.
Yes. Yeah.
For the non-rugby fans, because all the big nations play all the big nations every single year.
Meaningful games.
And every game, yeah.
Meaningful in the sense that all sports fans would understand.
Because
there's a trophy at the end of this. Yes. There's a position.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, Owen Slott wrote something this week, which I found really interesting, and I think this will be exacerbated as well now. Through CV, I can't see how it wouldn't be, put it that way. Which is, Ireland, and this leads into one of our other topics, but the Ireland-Italy game's cancelled.
And our beloved Ulster and Benetton, so we're supposed to be playing each other.
Devastated.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, awful, awful stuff.
But
where do they fit the fixtures in?
Yeah.
And I can't see there being a CVC scenario where we get less rugby, which is ironic that we want less rugby. I want less rugby, but more quality.
I was really surprised that they didn't say, well, I can understand it because it's clearly a financial one. There's a lot of money that they would lose as a consequence. But I was surprised they didn't say, we're going to have to play the game behind closed doors.
I'm a little bit surprised because in Serie A, there's been 5 games cancelled as well. It doesn't seem, purely because the TV coverage is so meaningful and so big, it doesn't seem like it's that huge a loss to play it behind closed doors. Because, and you could even have like a deal where any season ticket holders who've not got a Sky subscription or whatever, Premier Sports subscription, can get a link to a website that shows it for free. I give them a free link to it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not quite the same product if there's no crowd noise, but these games might not get played.
You know what? I think I'll just nil-nil it and move on. Because do you remember when the foot and mouth?
I'm well up for it. Let's just write the whole. Let's write the year off. No, sorry, France, no Grand Slam.
Yeah. Sorry, Liverpool, no.
Sorry,
Premier
Liverpool,
League.
No Premiership.
What a shame! What a shame! I'm all for that. But if you remember, during foot and mouth, Ireland versus Wales was cancelled. So I feel like they replayed it in October or something.
They did. Yeah, that's right. Played it in an autumn international weekend.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, there is a precedent of doing this, but my God, that's playing it next season is a bit of a joke.
But as we know now, or as we know for England certainly, the autumn international fixtures are already set. So you'd have to compromise those fixtures.
Well, I guess because they're 2 Pro 14 teams, they can just...
England would do, we'll put our B team out against Tonga and we'll play the first team in the Six Nations
there
match.
There you go.
Back-to-back games.
You could do back-to-back games, actually.
That'd be quite
that
cool.
Might actually be quite cool. Mm. Tim, you solved the problem.
There you go. Welcome.
You've not solved the problem of the 8 p.m. kickoff, the Argentina game, which is 8 p.m. for TV.
Oh, this is another thing which is getting everyone upset. Kickoffs at 8 p.m. Is anyone upset by an 8 p.m. kickoff?
No, I'm disappointed they got rid of the Friday night Six Nations game.
Friday night Wales game.
Yeah. I love that. DJ Spoonie.
I do like watching it.
I don't mind a late night game on a Saturday. I wasn't sure on a Friday.
No, the Saturday game's good. It's particularly on the Super Saturday when...
Yeah,
what was it?
Awesome.
2, 5 and 8. Was that...
Yeah,
or was that just because
like
we were abroad and it the might, time difference was...
Yeah.
Where did we watch that?
2, 5 and 8.
We watched one of them in
Romania.
Romania, yeah.
Oh no, that was time difference.
Yeah, there was some of it was time difference, but
it was
still
awesome.
It's still awesome. 1, 3 and 5 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we were absolutely blind by the third game.
I'm trying to think, like, what is wrong with a few Negronis before a game, file into the game, come out of the game, a few Negronis after the game. I mean, that's a great. You've got 3 hours.
I'm having flashbacks to that night. That was a wild night.
Meet at 5, drink responsibly,
very
responsibly up until 8. Watch a game of rugby. And get back out.
It's like going to a gig.
I know what the problem is. I know what the problem is, right? The problem is England have ruined it for everyone because their stadium is possibly in the worst place on earth. I mean, it's actually very nice. It's, you know, it's not like it's in, you know, the worst place on earth. But like
that is first world problems if that's the worst place you've ever been to.
Quite. Yeah. But
it's Southwest London. Yeah.
But for Cardiff, it worked brilliantly.
It's just too leafy.
Yeah, it's too leafy.
The houses are too nice.
But Cardiff, it'd be fine. In the city, back out in the city.
Dublin's
so
the same. The Aviva is a trek if you want to be in central Dublin.
Is it?
Yeah.
So, Wales can do it. Just be sensible with it.
But also, the problem is, so you would, if you live anywhere outside the M25, pretty much, you would have to stop over in London. And particularly if you're having a few Negronis and you can't drive.
Yeah, you would.
Because, well, there are no trains back to Manchester after 9 p.m. on a Saturday.
That's madness, isn't it?
Yeah. And
it's
that train,
madness.
That last train is like the Wild West.
Yeah.
The last train on a Saturday
night.
Oh,
the train station in Cardiff is unbelievable.
Yeah, the train.
Unbelievable.
So I used to work one day a week down in London when I did the evening show, and I'd get the 11 o'clock train. The last one back from London to Manchester. God. And it took longer, and it was everyone that...
Had a few drinks after work.
Oh, yeah, God. The number of times I had to move carriage because someone just chundered all over the shop.
Well, actually, a bad one was... I spent a bit of time working down in London, and leaving London sometime between kind of 3 and 5 on a Friday afternoon would just be, you'd sit down and I'd either be doing work or trying to read or just doing something boring, and there would be bottle opening, can opening, champagne popping, champagne popping.
The amount of champagne that I've drank on trains, on the way to a weekend somewhere.
I'm really stubborn, which you know.
No,
you guys know.
Well, Tim, I know.
And it was on a Friday afternoon, exactly how you described it. It was a hen weekend going to Manchester.
Perfect.
And they got on at Milton Keynes, and sort of gradually, they were so noisy and so wild. People gradually started moving out of the carriage to go somewhere else.
Have I told you?
And I was like, I shouldn't have to move because of this. And in the end, I went, sod it, I'm going. Yeah.
Have I told you the story about sitting on a train talking about Danny Cipriani?
Oh, yes, me and you.
Yes, we were
back from the Canterbury event.
Yeah, we did a Canterbury event and we came back and we were talking about Danny Cipriani. And in the corner of my eye, I can see this woman looking at me. And she carries on looking at me. And I'm like, okay, I think you must... I think Phil must clock the Tim.
Yeah.
And eventually she couldn't help herself. And she basically introduced herself and went, hi... I'm Lauren. I just want to say I'm Danny's friend, and he came around my house the other night. Turns out that she's a cast member from Real Housewives of Cheshire.
She got off at Wilmslow or Oddly Edge.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, oh, that's nice. How do you know Danny? Oh, I can't tell you that. I was like, why did you bother? But yeah.
As soon as we started talking about rugby, she was like...
I think she moved seats. She's desperate to talk
to
about.
To work her way into the conversation.
Yeah, she was developing. Her name was Lauren something. I can't remember. But
Was it perfume?
Yeah, she was developing perfume. And like, she could not answer the most basic questions on perfume. Is it a natural scent? Is it a synthetic scent? Who's building it for you? Where's it? It's very expensive. But that's all we got. It's very expensive.
You should have asked what colour's the box.
Way!
No, that wasn't a...
Oh, sorry. Way!
I just meant maybe simplify the level of depth.
Yeah, okay.
I'll move on. So you mentioned the Ireland game. That could be the first, like, England's game's got to be under threat as well. The final game, Super Saturday, could be ruined.
Oh, God, no. It can't be ruined.
Potentially.
Someone somewhere really doesn't want Sergio Parise to have a farewell game.
God.
He's never, ever.
How long does he have to play for to get his game?
Another 5-year contract at Toulon.
I'd say so. I hope not.
So, Ireland game is gone, Ireland, Italy.
Yeah.
And its health minister stepped in and said, safety concerns. It does. So, at the moment, the COVID-19 outbreak and spread in the UK doesn't seem to be significant enough to warrant stopping. For example, the England-Wales match that I will be at next Saturday. Oh. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed indeed.
Awesome.
But it can only take a few more outbreaks and some unrelated cases being spread. So spreads where you don't know who has spread it. So there is a break in the chain.
Yeah.
So you cannot go back and follow your steps. That things like this could be stopped. It's not unreasonable to see in the next few weeks that could happen.
They're still in the containment phase at the moment. So that's a part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, dear.
Watch this space. Fingers crossed that I will be okay.
Has anyone looked into the World Health Organization, what they've been planning for? Because they have to plan for like worst case scenarios.
No, I've never even thought of doing that.
No.
It's like the worst case scenario kind of planning is planning on the basis of 40% of people on Earth contracting it.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is a lot.
But with a 2% death rate. That's still a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the death rate is still uncertain.
No, and particularly as there are some people in China who got it, recovered from it, then got it again.
Brilliant.
Yeah, which raises suspicions, or it raises suspicions about the way that they are dealing with it, or it raises suspicions about potential mutations and alteration
I think this one's going to...
I think this one's going to rumble on.
You work for quite a big company, Phil. Is it starting to...
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's conversations... I work in a big company and there's a lot of conversations starting to be had.
There is... Certainly, the risks are being assessed at the moment. Yeah. So I wouldn't say much more than that.
Might all get to work from home for a bit.
Amazing.
Potentially. You can't build many airports working from home, sadly.
Yeah. You can do radio, can't you? It'd be fun.
I need to get my studio in the loft up sorted out. Anyway, Right, what else? What else is bubbling along then?
Well, there's some actual rugby. I mean, we've done very well not to talk about any rugby.
Tell us about your red card.
Oh God, yes. 2 seconds. Yeah, so I was playing Liverpool St Helens yesterday.
Your first ever red card.
First ever red card.
Have you been red carded, Phil?
I've had a couple of yellows. I don't think I've got red card.
I've never had a red card.
I'm pretty certain I've
have
never got
not,
a red card.
Have you not?
No.
That surprised me. Yeah, so
I throw full punches in training, not
yeah.
not in games.
I hit my friends. it was a bad one. I'm not gonna lie, it's a bad one. Not my finest moment. I effectively did what Harry Williams did a few weeks ago. So I was on the sideline, got subbed off. I was probably preaching about the values of the game at the time when there was a breakdown about maybe on the 5 metre line, right in front of me, and one of the Liverpool St Helens players decided to punch and kick one of our guys on the floor.
On the deck.
On the deck. Ooh. So I ran on to intervene. Not to punch, I might add, to intervene, to politely ask him to stop. And on my way onto the field, he moved out of the way, causing me to mistime my push, so I actually fell over. I made no contact with the player. And the referee just looked at me and said, red card. And he turned around to the guy and went, red card.
So you
I made zero effect, made an arse out of myself, and I'm probably banned for a couple of games.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to get red carded and you want it, because you're going theory? To seek vengeance, at least like make your point strongly rather than look a bit of a tit doing it.
I looked exactly. I looked in the worst possible light, both an idiot for going on and incompetent for not being able to.
See, if you'd have run on to try and separate people, that's one thing.
That's exactly what I did.
Did you only separate though?
Yeah.
Well, that was the intention.
Only walk.
Did it look like you were running on in malice?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But maybe it did. I don't know. I'll be for others to judge, not me.
Do you know if LSH were taping the game?
They were not taping the game.
And did Talk H weren't?
No. We remember everything. But yeah, good game though. On the plus side, played at the Armitage Centre in Union of Manchester. Some awesome 3G pitches.
What's the deal when you get a red card? Are you allowed to sit on the side, or do you have to leave the field and go back to the
clubhouse? Well, I wasn't on the field. You see,
no, do you have to go back to the clubhouse?
Well, no one made me, so I just stayed where I was. Mm. So they red carded me, fine. But kind of tactically, I'm already off the field, aren't I? So we've still got 15 men.
Oh yeah.
So that we didn't have to.
What's the law there?
You just the sub just goes.
Yeah.
But their guy also.
If a manager is sent off, a coach.
Yeah, of course.
So the other guy obviously was still playing. So they went down to 14 for the last 20, and we obviously had the full 15.
Did he get sent off
for the kicks and the punches?
Yes. Because the kicks and the punches, the ref saw it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, I don't think the ref would have sent him off if I hadn't have come on.
Well, there you go. You did.
Yeah.
Well,
so there you go.
Win-win.
But the fact you won comfortably anyway wasn't necessary. And it was at the end of the game.
Yeah. Right at the end. It was completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
And I looked like a fool. So it is what it is.
And if you get a touchline ban, so if you're banned from playing and you get a touchline ban, it'd be like when all of the heart surgeons are out of town at a conference. The death rate for heart issues goes down because no surgeries. So there's no complications. So if you're off the pitch, your team will do much, much better because you can't coach and influence them.
Oh, they'll miss your team talk. You can smuggle yourself in like Mourinho did in the European quarterfinal when he had a touchline ban. He went in the bottom, one of those big trolleys that collect. I think I've said this before. One of those big trolleys that collects all the towels. Mm. He went in one of those covered in a load of towels. They wheeled him into the dressing room. He did his team talk. Then they wheeled him back out.
That is remarkable, isn't it? I mean, why you risk? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
You would love it if a manager did that for you. How much would you love that?
Yeah, quite a lot actually.
That is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
You could be like Carlos Ghosn.
Yeah,
Renault Nissan chairman who got smuggled out of his
in a cello case.
Yeah, under house arrest by the Japanese authorities.
Your security, right? Is that the new protocol now? If you see a thing full of towels being pushed around, do you have to ask, is there a Premiership manager in there? There's no Premiership manager in there, is there? No, sir. No, there's not. Right, let's. What about the Premiership?
Some actual rugby.
34 minutes in. Some actual rugby.
Yeah. Well, another really interesting weekend of rugby. And at times, there was some good rugby in spite of the conditions, which were pretty biblically awful in a lot of cases.
I thought the Bath game was awesome. All things considered, it was awesome. That second half was
was great.
The second half, yeah.
It was, yeah. The conditions pretty bad. Bristol managed them so much better than Bath, though.
Yeah, Bristol. The best thing about Bristol, I think, it was how comfortable they were without the ball.
Mm.
I mean, I know they conceded that one try
right at the end.
But actually, I think the tackle was something like double that of Bath's.
Yeah, and for a team that last year, when they first came into the Premiership, they were intent on keeping possession, playing from ever all the time. They're still doing that and still trying it, but
at the right time.
Actually, they've got a bit more balance this year, which is why they find themselves in third position in the table.
Yeah.
Does anyone know Charles Pietel's a good player? Is anyone aware of that?
We had an inkling, yeah.
Yeah, he's fairly handy. I'd say that the best player this game, possibly the best player of the weekend, and there were some bloody good ones, was the Laouia try with the Sheedy break and that cross kick. To have the vision and the ability to execute that when he's going full pace. Sheedy's going full pace. Laouia's going full pace.
And with Priestland getting a knock on his knee and having to go off, Dan Bigger getting a knock on his knee and having to go off. Is Callum Sheedy close to maybe...
Maybe.
Jared Evans, Sheedy.
Is Jared Evans fit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll be starting against England.
Yeah.
You've got to say he's definitely next one up. I think Bigger will be fit though.
I don't know.
Chris Boyd said it's not as serious as it looked, and it won't be a long-term one. It's just a slight hyperextension.
Reece Priestland was never in the frame anyway, was he? That was speculation that bring him up.
Just because he's played there before. I mean, Wales are not blessed with an abundance of starting tens.
A few years ago, I would have said, why doesn't Dan Jones get a shot? You know, the Scarlets 10.
Yeah.
I mean, he won the Pro 14. At 10.
Was he playing most
of the time? They've got plenty of players when everyone's fit. They've just got a freak injury crisis at the minute.
They're going to get pounded to dust by England.
Arguably, they've got more options than England ready to go.
Who've got international experience. Yeah. Because once you
Bigger,
get through...
Bigger, Ainscombe, Patchell. There's three right there that have played international rugby. England don't have three. Priestland, four. England don't have four players that have played international rugby. They're ready to go.
Toby Flood's still playing at Newcastle. He's just signed an extension on his contract.
Ready to go.
Sippers.
Here's what I don't get. I don't get the mental strain that is going to be placed on Reece Webb having to hang up that beautiful Bath jersey. Leave whatever beautiful place that he's living in Bath. Not be able to go for coffee with the boys in
not
one
have to
of
spend
the most
any time
beautiful
at
cities
Farley House.
On earth. Yeah, not go to training at Farley House and trade it all in for what? The Ospreys.
And where's he been for the past 18 months or 2 years?
Toulon,
the south coast of France.
And he's going to go to the Ospreys. I mean, it must be a devastating mental blow, that. Just the thought of it. And he looks so good in the Bath shirt. I mean, he really does make a big difference, considering that's his first game. I mean, if you imagine him with Bath for the entire season, I think he'd be legitimately very, very good.
If they could improve that pitch, it would help him.
Yeah.
He did have an 8 and a 10 that he's played with a few times before as well in Faletau and Priestland, so that obviously helps.
Yep. Oh, yeah, of course he has.
That pitch definitely does seem to, or has recently seemed to help Bath. They just go with the heavy traffic. It actually almost plays to their strengths. They've got a lot of big bodies.
Yeah.
And
big pack from
they can squeeze out wins. But Bristol, like you say, defensively, were up to it.
Do you know what really got me about Bristol today is the amount of times they used that lead runner? They used their lead runner off the 10 a lot, and it was continually effective. And the precision that they run that line with is awesome. So, basically what you're looking at a short pass off 10, but the timing continually is so good, and the movement off the ball which they show in order to get that timing is brilliant.
Yeah, and as a lot of teams do, they have the shape where they have the player behind that you can go wide, and as the pitches dry up, as the conditions get better, you'll see more teams starting to use that. But Bristol, very intelligently, when they did have the ball, kept it quite simple.
Had
a little bit of stardust with Pietau and like Luatua's lift was out this world good.
If they finish fourth, I actually think that's their best way to get to the final, because we've seen them beat Exeter at Sandy Park. I like how, so they're not going to have that fear factor that maybe other teams will. And it's going to dry out too. So they're going to be super dangerous.
They will be dangerous. If they can get top four.
Talk about JB's like, no, Bristol, don't come and play Sale.
I have no bearing. For the neutral, all those games would be wonderful.
Well, Sale... So the Sale travel to Gloucester.
Yeah, Gloucester's whole theme of the Friday night was be kind, and they were very kind. Gloucester were very, very kind.
God, they were. This game. I mean,
who Who do you fire? This is a serious question. Right? Now, I'm not saying anyone should be fired, but who do you fire when your head coach doesn't coach and your director of rugby doesn't coach? I mean, where does the buck stop?
Well, I think it looks like there has to be a restructure of those two somehow. I don't know how you do it. But Gloucester, looking at the table on Friday night, I was amazed to see. So Gloucester are the same number of wins as Worcester, Leicester and London Irish. They're 4 out of 12 wins. They've not lost a huge number of bodies to... They lost a few. Lost Moster and a couple of others. But they never lost a huge number to internationals. They're losing very few to Six Nations. Everyone was expecting this to be Gloucester's year, me included.
I agree. They should have been top four again.
Yeah, they should have been, and they just haven't. And games like this, which say they've got a big pack, Gloucester also have a big pack. It's not the pack that it shouldn't have been. It should not have been the pack. Well, this is where I got to on Friday night was, and I can't remember who it was in comms. Might have been Glenn Delaney was doing it. But someone in comms said at the end of that first half, early in the second half, key difference between the two tens. Dupree has barely passed. He's kicked a lot of things intelligently and at the right times. Cipriani has been trying to pass. And Cipriani has been trying to play more of his usual game in conditions that were just not appropriate for it.
How does that happen when you've got a 10 of the experience of Danny Cipriani?
Yeah. The two centres are experienced, intelligent ball players.
And you'd almost think Sippers is the kind of guy that even if the coach said, run it, let's play, let's go. He'd actually on the field. We've seen Danny Cipriani run the show enough, and
he's completely in charge.
People talk about him being running the attack. So you've got to almost say that's on him.
Hines, I mean, yeah, it is, because I was going to say Hines makes a big difference.
Well, I said last week. I said I think Hines is the most important one because he does it for England, but more so for Gloucester. He controls tactically the whole. He controls that team tactically.
But Hines not being there is also no excuse for your fly half not to, do what he needs to do. I think the bigger problem. I mean, look, if Sale had never seen Gloucester play before in their lives, Danny Cipriani probably would have had a ton of success.
And potentially in different conditions, because the conditions were bad.
But does anything that Gloucester do ever surprise you? Do you think, oh, I've not seen that before? You've seen everything before, and we've seen it for 2 years now, solidly. And I think teams, particularly when, you've had all week to prepare for it, they know exactly what to do.
But Friday night wasn't about doing anything that surprises you. It's about doing the basics really well.
Yeah, get to the right part.
Get to the right part of the field. Don't cough the ball up, knock on, as they did again and again and again.
Yeah.
Don't give away cheap pens, which they did. And Johan Ackerman said before the game, our issue isn't necessarily our issue isn't necessarily giving away a penalty. It's giving away three penalties on the bounce, compounding a knock on with a penalty or a penalty.
And they did that against.
And they did that again and again and again.
And they did it a few weeks ago against Exeter, I think it was, where there was a 20-minute period of this early in the second half. And they made half a dozen stupid decisions, one on top of the other, and conceded about 15 points because of it.
Yeah, I don't think they're done. Far from it. I think they'll still make a push for the top four because that squad is too good. I think the coaches, despite a dip, are still good coaches. So when I said, who do you sack? I don't want anyone sacked. I'm just making the wider point. Is like, who is actually accountable for this? If it comes to it, who do you blame? I think they will come back, they'll make a push to the top four because they're too good not to, surely.
And they're 6 points off top four as it currently stands, which they're in ninth position. A couple of wins and they're right back in the race.
Yeah.
But it's more the way that they've been playing and the manner of the defeats recently that would be concerning for me if I were a Gloucester fan.
I completely agree.
Their forwards aren't dominating at any point in games, which... They were last year. They have very dominant spells, at least. But they're just shooting themselves in the foot. And it's doing the basics really well. And Exeter, we'll get onto their game. They lost to Harlequins. The penalty count was 21-7 against Exeter.
Which is very un-Exeter.
And you lose games doing that.
Just on Gloucester again, though. Like, maybe the fact is they're neither one... I mean, they don't play as nice rugby as Bristol and they're not as physical as Bath or Sale. They're sort of in between. I think that might be a bit of a problem too.
It might be better when the conditions get a little bit better, because you can adapt more to one thing or another.
Mm.
But right now, when they should be one thing, like Sale were very much one thing in that. They got to the right part of the pitch, they used their big forwards, they ground it out. They did it very effectively.
And I would just say about Sale, really well. I mean, the defence was... I didn't even realise I had a good defence, personally. I didn't realise that until the stats were pointed out last week. And turns out they've got a very good defence, because I'm looking at the attack. I still don't think that they're playing well. I think there's still so much more to come.
But they are grinding. And it is interesting to hear more people now getting on to the bandwagon. Flatman was on it a couple of weeks ago saying, well, actually, could they go all the way? Get top four. They've got the pack to do it.
I think...
They've got some of the outside backs to do it.
Yeah, at the moment.
I'm not quite there yet.
I don't think they're there. I don't think... there needs to be a lot more cohesive before they're going to be a real challenger. I think Bristol are about as real a challenger as you could get.
Well, this is it. So during this period where the weather's been particularly poor, the conditions underfoot make it very difficult, you'd think... And it's been borne out. Territory, applying pressure, making it really hard for teams to get out of their own half, taking advantage of wind conditions when that's appropriate, is the way to go. And you've seen the teams which have a little bit more of that proclivity to just go for it a little bit more, like Gloucester, like Northampton, have struggled in this little window. Mm. But that's what's really impressive about Bristol, is I would have thought they would have got caught up in that as well.
And last season they would have done. Last season, in these conditions, they absolutely would have struggled at this time, and did struggle at this time. This season, they've been a bit smarter,
a bit more streetwise. That's what's surprising me about Gloucester. Have got a lot of experience in that team, but they're not being streetwise.
Yeah.
And Northampton, well, I mean,
Northampton Saracens.
Well, you've got to give credit to Saracens, but Northampton losing Dan Bigger, he clearly, you look at the opening minutes, you saw the difference. And again, this is what's surprising me.
Those
about
two early tries.
Are you a Dan Bigger fan, though?
I think he's an outstanding player. I hate his whinging. The two things can be true at once. And I think the way he is on the field, outside of his playing, is so infuriating. And I wish he'd stop.
I agree with that. I love him as a player. But, yeah.
He's an absolute warrior. And the difference he's made to Northampton, just like they were ahead 14-0 after 12 minutes when he went off.
Yeah.
And goodness me. Sorry, I've just got a text, which I'll tell you guys about shortly.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Exciting.
But that's why that's what's really disappointing me. And I hope his head's okay. He's clearly had an issue, but, some issues, and he's, had a lot on his plate, Danny Cipriani. I just want to see the Sippers that we've known, because I think his sort of he's not been streetwise for whatever reason.
And yeah, he's definitely dipped.
I do wonder, given everything that's going on with Cipriani, if the best thing for him would be to take a short break away from rugby for 2 or 3 weeks. Get his head right.
You would really struggle to say this is the same player that we saw last year, and we've been saying 100%. That for absolutely weeks now.
And things might make more sense knowing what we know now based on the form this season. Mm. So I really do. But it would take, it's a difficult decision for a DOR or a head coach, whatever Ackerman and Humphreys are. It's a difficult decision when you're not playing well to push your star player out or release your star player.
He's also, your backs coach, your attack
coach.
Yeah,
yeah. He's so intense.
He's basically everything.
But if he's not right, it's not
working. Do you
reckon
there's a... I mean, this is kind of callous, I guess. But do you reckon there is a lesson here, which is don't put too many eggs in...
Single point of failure.
Yeah, in one basket. I mean, if he's that important, should he have been there? Should he be allowed to be this important?
It's a good question.
Like, maybe he needs to be put with...
Is there any way of building a team around any other way of building a team around Danny Cipriani?
No, I don't think there is. I think you make that deal.
You know the trade-offs. It's all or nothing.
Mm. Oh well, they'll have to cross that bridge where they've got to either pay Williams, an extension on his $400,000, or re-sign Danny
for the two games that he's played in the last three years.
I'm sure I worked him out as getting £30,000 a game.
It's better than England money.
Yeah.
The other game, unless you've got anything more to talk about that.
Well, I've got a few more things on sale, obviously.
Of course.
So, signing. We've got a signing.
Signing?
Yeah, they've signed Sam Hill from Exeter. So that is a superb signing.
Young-ish English.
He's not that young anymore, right? He's about 27.
That's young.
He's got a good 5 years left in him.
English qualified. Yep. Robust. No, he's
good replacement for Van Rensburg.
He's not really got any rugby at Exeter, so it's good for him. Yep. Good for sale, fine. Good.
I think I'd prefer Hendrickson if I was a neutral.
I think that's why Exeter are letting Sam Hill go.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it stacks up. That's the first one. Second one, and I have no idea what is going on here. Anyone been following Racing on Twitter?
I've seen the Finn Russell interception, and then a lovely floated pass, and then Finn Russell making some moves, or there's some moves that he might come back into the Scotland camp, but only after the Six Nations for the summer tour.
Well,
that's the only the Racing news that I've seen.
Well, something even more eye-catching on the Racing Twitter thread.
Go on.
Basically, all of Sale Sharks management staff are on a day out in Paris. Been to watch Finn Russell. Oh, God, yeah. Imagine that. That'd be awesome. for neutrals. I can only presume they want to build a defence arena somewhere in Trafford or something. So that must be why they're there.
Awesome. Hopefully that's what they're doing.
Do
they have any South Africans?
They've got
a fair few South Africans.
Racing have got a few.
So it could be that.
Is Klassen still there?
LaRue's there, Klassen's is there. I mean, they're French South Africans, aren't they now? But
yeah,
there's probably a few more.
Yeah, plenty.
I can feel looking at the fantasy rugby draft.
Oh, a bad week for me this week.
Oh, I absolutely thrashed JB.
Yeah, very good.
Thankfully,
week for
I've got 10 wins in the bank, so I don't need to worry too much.
Very good win for you this week, Tim.
I had to win that one. JB, like you say, he's in the playoffs. Whatever.
Oh, in the playoffs.
I have to win pretty much every game to make the playoffs. It's getting that way.
You can do it, Tim. You can do it.
Saracens for a second.
Yeah. Bonus point win for him.
Why? It's not that dissimilar to the team that got battered by Wasps. They beat Sale a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what the inside story is there.
I'd love to know what their motivation, how they're motivating for this game. Some of the younger lads, I can understand the motivation because they will be playing for a place in the squad
next year.
Well, next year, but also then the year after. Because if you play 20 odd games in the Championship next season as a team, that's a real good opportunity to get some recognition, to develop your game, and to come into the Premiership even stronger in 2 years' time. Another difference was Ben Earl, who was...
He looks so
sat
good.
Sat on my bench. I didn't think he'd do anything this week.
He looked
watching
awesome.
Watching Ben Earl and Sam Simmons this week, those two are just so explosive. They run so hard. They're so powerful. They're superb to watch.
Yeah, I was watching Exeter and thinking, actually, because there was a direct Simmons v Dombrandt, and I was thinking, next cab off the rank for England should be Sam Simmons, based on the way that Eddie Jones has set his team up to play work rate and explosivity. It should be Sam Simmons above Dombrandt.
Yeah, I would agree
with
that.
There's an amazing clip of Sam Simmons running. I think BT Sport put it up.
Yeah.
Like that guy, I know Christian Wade is in the NFL, but that guy could be in the NFL as a running back.
Earl is so explosive. And both of us so similar in that regard. They're both about the same height, just over 6 foot. They're both about the same weight, 105 kg, something like that. But they're so explosive. They hit much harder than their weight suggests they would do.
Exeter lost, no one really cares. I mean, obviously Quinns care.
That was actually the best game of the weekend.
I enjoyed that one the most.
I didn't say it. I was busy getting red carded before the game.
No, I enjoyed that game a lot. And you've got to say fair play to Quinns for digging in. Again, Exeter, I think... And I don't want to be unkind to Quinns. I think Exeter lost that game rather than Quinns won that game.
I would agree.
And the penalty count would hint at that 21-7. It was a really odd Exeter performance.
And there were some unusual decisions. The last 6 minutes or whatever it was, 80 plus six, final penalty try, which ended up, which I find it hard to see why that is a penalty try.
Yes.
But the ref was correcting his mistake for blowing up too early.
Yeah.
3 minutes
previously. So did you see any of that, JB? So basically, there was a... Quinns had a scrum. They got a real shunt 5 metres out from the Exeter line. They got a real shunt on. Referee put his arm out for advantage. And then as Danny Kerr was picking up the ball, blew for the penalty. Danny Kerr wanged a pass to Ibatoyi, who would have got you some fancy rugby draft points. Ibatoyi scored it, but the referee had already blown, so he knew he dropped a bollock there.
Don't worry, Jay. Unless Ibatoyi is getting 100 points for that one try, you wouldn't have won this week.
I know.
So anyway, Christoph Ridley realised he dropped a bollock. Another yellow card, two yellow cards. I think the first yellow card had already been given by that point. A second yellow card, and then a number of penalties later, and Christoph Ridley gave a penalty try on a scrum that there was never enough of a shunt to know that that was going to be a try.
Yeah.
No way.
Most likely been scored or whatever it is, in the balance of probability that it would have been scored.
No chance.
I can kind of understand it from just repeat infringements. That was...
But you don't give a penalty try for repeat infringements.
Yeah.
You give another yellow card for repeat
infringements. Yeah, you're right.
You don't use a penalty try as a punitive measure.
Yes. Quinns could have been down to 12 men.
Yeah. Or Exeter, sorry.
Sorry, yeah, Exeter.
So, but my whole moment of the weekend and was Rob Baxter. So he was asked after the game,
yeah,
what did you make of that? Because he actually went up to the referee and, you know, you could see him chatting. He looked confused. Understandably, it was a shocking decision. And Rob Baxter said, well, yeah, I went to ask the referee what his thought was with the penalty try because I didn't understand how he could give a penalty try. But listen, there was more in our control than that. We should have put the game to bed.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
You think about what the reaction of other DORs might have been, and very few would have been as measured and calm and reasonable as Rob Baxter was, and he is a credit to Exeter, credit to the Premiership, credit to the whole sport.
I get it. There's a problem with Baxter, right?
I love the man.
Yeah, the problem with Baxter is he makes everyone else look bad.
He actually does.
You know, DORs up and down the land must rip out their hair, for ones that still have hair, because the guy's perfect. He's annoyingly perfect. So everyone else is held to the same standard as Rob Baxter. I imagine there's going to be a DOR in the next couple of days that's going to be held to the same standard as Rob Baxter.
Rightly so. That's how standards work.
Yeah, but...
That's how leaders... Yeah, that's leadership
look,
right there.
We can't all be Rob Baxter, right? So, like... Yeah,
we should all aspire to be a little bit more Rob Baxter.
I agree with that.
I would say, you know, you can.
What would Rob Baxter do? Yeah, that's a little filter we can live our lives by.
If you're asking what would Rob Baxter do, you're only ever going to accept that you'll be not quite as good as Rob Baxter. Whereas if you want to go out and beat Rob Baxter, which a lot of these DORs have to be, they've got to be their own man.
But
take a different path.
No, but that's not. You're chunking up to the macro level. Take it down to the micro level and little decisions every day. Like you're on the side of a pitch at Liverpool St Helens.
Yeah.
In that very moment, you could say, "What would Rob Baxter do? What would Rob Baxter do?"
He wouldn't have got a red card.
He'd have shaken his head, kept it to himself, and had a quiet word with the referee afterwards if he'd missed it.
Over a pint. Speaking of brilliant moments, and there were two young English fly halves in this game.
Yes, there were.
And both of them had bloody good games.
They did.
Both of them scored some superb tries, actually. Marcus Smith got one, and Joe Simmons got two superb tries.
Joe Simmons looked the bollocks.
Either of those two, if you're talking
both
next,
of them,
next
yeah.
cab off the rank, I think either of them could have a bit more time in the England squad. I say a bit more time for Joe Simmons hasn't had any, but Mark Smith has had a tiny.
And he's
tiny
got
bit.
To take at least one new fly half to Japan. He has to.
Because
exactly as we identified, Wales know they can call on, if everyone was fit, could call on four guys who've played international rugby.
Yeah.
England can call on two, and the third would be Danny Cipriani, who's not in great form at the moment.
Yeah, unless you're going to go to Toby Flood. which is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
There must be someone else. Stephen Myler ever been capped by England?
I think Ryan Lamb's still playing.
Freddie Burns!
Yeah,
oh,
2012.
I do. That's the guy who I really want successful. Like, I don't think he's had a fair crack at it at Worcester. I'd love to see him get some
Worcester. Freddie Burns.
Bath. Yeah. go somewhere else and then really get a good shot at establishing himself as starting 10 again.
There is talk of him going to France, isn't there?
Hope not. He's too much of a character for us to lose from the Premiership.
That would mean his England days are done as well if he goes to France.
Yeah, I mean, he might consider they're done anyway at this point.
They pretty much are.
Unless there's a fly-half convention where they're all travelling there by air.
Yeah.
And something awful happens.
No, it'd be like Air Force One. No way George Ford and Owen Farrell can fly in the same plane.
You're putting all the fly-halves on the same plane today. Yes, all of them. Yeah, that's the only way he's getting back in. But I still want him in the Premiership. I think he's one of those guys that we need.
Yeah, I would have liked to see him have a bit more time at Bath.
Someone else who did a good stint at fly-half, a young Englishman, Harry Malinder. Started at fullback, looked really good, 12. Absolutely ghosted through, scored a brilliant try.
Yeah.
And then stepped in when Dan Biggar went off, he went in at fly-half and looked really good.
He went in the 20s World Cup, did he not, at fly-half?
He played a bit of 15.
He played 12 and 10, mainly, and a bit of 15.
I think he's a 12. I watched
that whole tournament. He played several positions.
There you go.
I would like to see him at
that was
13.
The one when I spotted Stockers.
Oh,
and came
yeah.
back and told you. And watch out for Jacob Stockdale.
And Andrew signed him up like
and Geordie Barrett, although that's, you know, with the surname
like
that
was
less
a bit obvious.
Of a find.
And Andrew Porter, wasn't it?
Yep, Andrew Porter as well, yeah.
Yeah. Good scouting, Tim.
Yeah. So...
Speaking of young talent, actually, did anyone see Ryan Baird?
No.
So, Leinster hammered Glasgow, unsurprisingly. Dave Carney scored a hat-trick. Also... Young Irishman, under-20s lock, 20-year-old lock, Ryan Baird scored a hat-trick, including at least one from 50 metres out.
What?
Which is pretty bloody impressive, and people are talking him up massively. So all I know about him is the highlights I've seen of this game.
I'm just about to...
The front rows went to ground, Wallow in midfield spills it, Connors for Deegan, who has a little look up and sees no one there and claims the yards until someone arrives, and then Lowe and Tomani.
Right, something's got to happen soon. Sorry about this. I'm sure we're breaking some. Oh my word, he's got gas. Yeah, he's quite a big boy as well.
Yeah.
Sakamo's position, right? Really you good. Never know how fast they are because they're always working in heavy traffic.
Yeah,
but occasionally
they get to open up.
Yeah, and when they spread those legs and they're 6'5", they can cover some distance pretty rapidly.
It takes them a while to get up to speed, but once they're up to speed...
Yeah. I remember, and every now and again, there's like a lock that comes on the scene and makes a name for themselves by doing something like that. James Gaskell was the same.
He scored from the halfway line against Toulouse.
Dean Mum. Someone a little bit like that.
Demon, yes. Awesome player. Awesome player.
I think of other rangy locks that have...
Didn't Whitelock score an incredible try?
Whitelock did, yeah. Radiki Samo would be another one.
He was an eight.
Kind of 8/lock/winger.
Wing, yeah.
Chris Jones, the old Sale lock, did the same thing. He sort of burst on the scene with just being rapid.
Apparently, he's a very good goal kicker. So I was at Sale the other week, and someone introduced me to his old coach in Leeds. So he used to play at Leeds University. And he's apparently going on at this coach for all season. Can I kick? So let him kick last game of season. 100% record.
Really?
Yeah, he's really been an awesome kicker.
Have
we done all the... Leicester, Worcester.
Oh, no, sorry, hold on. Just one thing. So we touched on Gloucester. Northampton, that's 4 defeats in a row.
And it was going so well. I think a few weeks ago, you'd say, don't Northampton handle their business so well? Isn't Chris Boyd
absolute
genius? Maybe it's just a reflection of this league and how difficult it is.
And also, the Northampton and Chris Boyd way of playing is not as well suited to the conditions.
It can't be that much different in Northampton to... Wellington, can it?
No, sorry. The conditions that they've been at this point in time.
Right, okay, so.
But you are right.
Because everyone's like, over in New Zealand, they just play... I'm sure New Zealand is basically Anglesey. Bit of a bigger Anglesey, right?
It's slightly different. I always get it the wrong way
certainly
around.
Certainly similar
latitude.
Culturally.
Or longitude. Longitude.
Yeah. How many teams wouldn't be massively affected if you took out their 4 frontline locks?
Saracens.
Saracens, probably.
Saracens, other than Saracens.
Yeah, you remove Hunter Hill.
Maybe Exeter, because the system they play just seems to be...
I guess if you move...
Yes, Exeter will just get another massive South African who can play lock slash back row.
Yeah, I mean, the way that Saracens are lined up at the moment, if you removed Hunter Hill, Kapoku, Skelton, and who's...
Ezekwe.
You'd only be left with Itoje and Cruz. So, you know...
But Northampton have got their issues. But yeah, I think you're right to point out, and it has affected Gloucester, the conditions or lack of management of. But then you lose Dan Biggar, that will happen. You're right to say, think how big this game would have been.
With?
Relegation.
Yeah, exactly.
We were robbed of a huge 60 minutes.
Leicester-Worcester would have been.
So I've heard some stuff about Worcester. This is pure speculation. But I've heard it's all kicked off down at Worcester. With how they play, players and coaches, a little bit of friction. So I have no idea how valid that is, but I'll investigate it during the week. Certainly be a turner on that, because I thought Worcester were going really well.
Well, one thing that is going well for Worcester, and actually if you want to look at England, one position where this season I think there's some real good things happening that could pay dividends in the future. Joe Marchant is tearing it up in Super Rugby. Two more tries, man of the match for the Blues in a really good win away at the Stormers.
I can't remember.
A South African team, might be the Stormers. Anyway, they were away wherever they were in South Africa.
Did you see what position he was playing?
Yeah.
And who was playing 13?
Who was 13?
Rico Ioane.
Oh yeah.
Who wants to play more in the centre? Which is interesting. So Marchant played on the wing with Rico Ioane. I've not actually seen the game.
I just saw the tries. He looked good.
He's a handy player. He's still only very young, Marchant.
He's very young. And someone else who's very young and in that same position, Ollie Lawrence, is playing week in, week out for Worcester.
I had him in my team.
I know, you dropped him from your fantasy team. I picked him up and you got hoisted by your own petard this weekend.
Yes, I did.
Because he was part of the
team. I'm going to have to pause this podcast for a second.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, and we're unpaused, so that was exciting, wasn't it?
What a pause.
But that's not anything we can talk about on this podcast, JB. Just trying to help you out there. My advice would be don't mention it, and that story will come out fairly soon, I imagine.
There you go.
And if we were professionals, we could drop an ad in there or something.
Yeah, we'll put an ad in there. Yeah, that's exactly what we'll do. Perfect.
But on the flip side, it's because we're professionals that we're not going to talk about that anymore, and we'll move on to something else.
Correct. Nicely done, Tim.
Transgenderism in rugby has come under the spotlight. The RFU have convened a load of experts on the topic.
World Rugby have convened
a load of experts on the topic at the Lensbury Hotel in Twickenham or Richmond or wherever it is in West London, Southwest London, to get different opinions on it so that they can then formulate a plan on how to deal with this, because I think they see rugby being a contact sport, and in fact the only contact sport involving females that's an Olympic sport, they feel like they should lead the way on this particular and very sensitive issue.
Yeah, so there's a few good tweets from Ross Tucker, who I like a lot, who does a lot of the concussion stuff, a lot of the injury stuff, and does quite a good podcast on this, talking about what the intention was and what they went through. And they gathered seemingly quite a diverse range of people, from players, scientists, doctors, lawyers,
sociologists
as well, to understand both sides of the arguments and understand where there is currently agreement and disagreement, with the objective of making the game safer for everyone. Uh-huh. Which seems like a very sensible way of approaching what is quite a politically sensitive
it is. And can I just say at this point, I almost, and this is unfortunately the, and this is partly due to the sort of Twitter world we're in, I almost don't want to say anything because I just feel like
I don't want to say anything.
I feel like if I say what I think is my opinion and what I believe would be the vast majority opinion, that it will still end up getting weaponized in some way. Yeah, so I'm just not going to say anything.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you in that. Okay, I don't really want to talk about the transgender stuff because I just don't think it's important enough. I am happy to talk about the RFU talking about the transgender stuff, though, which is slightly different, right? Which is just a complete waste of time, effort and resources. There's enough things in rugby going on which need sorting. I mean, what is this? This is a situation which is very unfortunate for very, 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 very few people. And I sympathise with their plight and their want to play rugby, so on and so forth. But I just don't think they need to spend so much time and effort on it. I don't think the game needs to get tied up in continually talking about it. So that's all I'm going to say. I don't want to talk about it any further than that.
I'm happy not talking about it any further as well. I think World Rugby are doing the right thing. This is to get to a conclusion.
But for what is best for players or something, probably.
Well, who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? Nobody knows.
But I'm hoping that we see real leadership in a very, very sensitive topic.
It's so,
because I think there's a lot of places where there's not strong leadership happening, and yeah. I think rugby has an opportunity to set some real clear leadership in this area.
Yeah, I agree.
The problem is the problem you've got is the situations that these individuals find themselves in are vastly, vastly different from one to the other. And because of the nature of the problem, you need kind of a all-encompassing solution from the top down, as you say, it's in real leadership. And I don't actually think it requires that. I think it needs a little bit of common sense at ground level and to be able to judge each case individually. So, for example,
that gets messy.
Oh, I don't like that.
I think it's got to be nuanced. Because if there's a guy who transitions to a woman and just happens to be rubbish and is even rubbish as a woman, I just, fine, let him play. If, however, Maratoji transitions to a woman, we can't really have that. So I think it's such an individual thing as well. How on earth can you do a one-size-fits-all? Because I can see a situation where...
But by that logic, you would say, Ben Taumafuna, you can't play because you're too big and strong.
I can see... Well, I'd say Ben Taumafuna, you can't play for your own health benefits.
or Faf de Klerk, you can't take. Look at the size of you. You can't do this.
Yeah, I get that.
So I think
these
it
are
needs
such rare cases, yeah. Right? That I don't think we need to worry about it. Like if you're 6'5" and you're running over everyone, no, that can't happen. But if you're absolutely rubbish, why not play?
Just play mixed touch.
Yeah, play mixed touch. Yeah, well, yeah, and then you get into all sorts of other problems. Anyway, we spoke about it for too long.
Yeah, we have. All I would generally say is, I hope we. I'm really positive about the way it's been done. I think rugby can show real clear leadership on this, and rugby, as ever, is a sport that is always welcoming and always sensitive to any background, any whatever. So
yeah, I definitely agree with that.
So good.
There is another World Rugby announcement this week. So the transgender trans athlete, the first inquiry took place last week. There is another, it's a symposium that's been announced coming forward.
Fancy.
Which is to investigate the ruck, which I think it's a good necessary move. Because it is such a potentially dangerous situation, it is so inconsistently refereed.
Oh, I agree with that. Can I give you the definitions of symposium and which one? Yes. Which one of these two are you hoping that the World Rugby Symposium is? Because definition number one of symposium, it's a noun. Firstly, a conference or meeting to discuss a particular subject. I suggest it's probably number one.
That sounds okay.
Number two, symposium, a drinking party or convivial discussion.
Ah.
Held after a banquet.
Oh, hang on. If it's number two, where is our invite?
Hang on. Who is running the symposium? Because if it's the RFU Council, for example, I know exactly what kind of symposium it is.
Five-star hotel. A
banquet.
Four-day symposium.
Yep.
In a five-star hotel.
Minimum.
That's,
minimum.
That's what we should call our tier two tours from now on.
The tier two, symposium. Love that idea. So what's happening in this ruck?
They're going to try and sort out the ruck.
It's fine.
I agree with Phil that it's refereed very inconsistently, and I think
it's
there are things that can be done to help the game as a product.
Yeah.
My only worry is that this is what we said would happen once you go down the route of trying to mitigate all injuries and things like that, is there'll be something else. It'll be high tackles now, there'll be something else next year, and there'll be something else the year after that, and something else the year after that. And I think we could end up talking ourselves into a load of more complicated laws. And actually, what I think about the ruck is you need to simplify. And if that's what comes out of this, then great. I worry that it's going to get more complex, more nuanced, more people saying, shouting about injuries and stuff, which is legitimate in some cases. So hopefully, if the outcome is simplify, I'm all for it.
So having read a lot of the work that was done...
JB is very... Are you still distracted by this story,
JB?
Sorry,
I am.
No, that's all right.
Having read the process that they followed for the high tackle stuff and the intention of the previous investigation into the high tackle, which was not to materially change the game but make things safer, and then having also witnessed, as soon as the changes that they brought in, the kind of law changes or the application of the law changes that were brought in, and witnessing a lot of people lose their mind and saying this is going to ruin rugby forever, kind of alarmist, people who were very alarmist, like they were when they read that Sky might take all of the Six Nations behind a paywall, and it's not actually played out like that. And I've got quite a lot of faith and confidence that the people who are making these decisions, the leadership shown by World Rugby, they have the best interests of the game at heart, and they have the best interests of people who watch the game and play the game at heart.
Mm.
And there might be changes that some people don't like, but overall it will not have it. I'm hopeful overall it will not have a significant negative effect on the game. And actually with the ruck, with how inconsistently it is refereed, and how you could show five different rucks, or actually, you could show the same ruck in five different games and it be five different refereeing decisions in those five different games. Could be exactly the same, but five different refereeing decisions.
I've got a really quick solution for them.
Massive uncertainty.
Oh, sorry, Phil. I've got a really quick solution that would mean that they can do the second definition of symposium and just get on it. As far as I'm concerned, the ruck can be solved if the referees ref the first person from each team arriving over a ruck.
Mm.
If the man clearing out his teammate, get him up and higher, then the guy jackaling has to be higher as well, and suddenly you eliminate the dangerous positions that people get into, and you eliminate the shots into head, shoulder and twisting knees and stuff, because that's the problem. It's the fact that guys are allowed to clear out rucks completely off their feet.
And they do. They really do. How much of a problem is it really? Have you seen the Gareth Thomas clip where he gets thrown in the air by a South African and like they all pile into the ruck, they're all off their feet, both sides just hammer into it. You think this is like eight penalties against South Africa and the penalty goes against Wales.
What percentage of injuries come from rucks?
I got
10-15%.
So I did, there was a journal article from an injury audit that said 10% of injuries come at the ruck. So it's a reasonable percentage. I didn't get a chance to read the full journal.
But I mean, 90% of injuries
are not from the ruck. But then
10% too many, mate.
But is it like a motorbike and car crash scenario where far fewer injuries come from
motorbikes.
Far fewer by number come from motorbikes? The severity of the injuries from motorbikes are enormous. Now, I'm not saying that is the case. But it would suggest that that is the case.
I would hope that that's the case for them to have a symposium on it, because 10%, bearing in mind how many rucks there are in a game.
Well, there are as many rucks as tackles. Mm. Near enough.
So I would hope that
And tackles and rucks have got to be the two most dangerous things.
Yeah, tackles is like 50% of injuries or something, isn't it?
Probably.
Like that.
But then if the average injury from a tackle is 1 week out,
it's very easy to pick on the breakdown because you can just pull it up. There's loads of illegal stuff going on anyway. And also that's like how many of the injuries are caused by illegal behaviour? Because so what, we clear it all up, but there's still 10% of injuries. Well, that's not helped.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there are so many rucks, I can imagine you clear it up. Maybe it's what Phil's saying, that the severity of injuries might be lower,
or they might go up. We don't know where the injuries are going from.
We might do.
They might do.
It's maybe being off your feet and lying on a player is far safer than contesting a ruck.
Well, there's one little thing as well that pisses me off about rucks.
Swearing, Tim.
Sorry. One thing really hacks me off about rucks that I'd also go for. So the one is get the man cleaning out his teammate higher.
So that
just, and that I think that changes everything.
And just on that was a really good point. I think it was Wayne Barnes who raised it. It is in the laws. So your shoulders have to be level or above your hips.
Yeah, no one refs that.
No one refs that.
Last time I
refs that
was when, would you believe it, George Smith first burst onto the scene and he stole a ball and his shoulders were lower than his hips. No, can't do that.
That is shoulders. Never, and no one refs, or is rarely ref, that you're not supporting your own body weight. Players, the jackler is often hooked onto the player who's lying on the floor. Yeah.
And I think the reason...
Knees on his back type
thing. Knees on his back and holding him. So the player, the people clearing out have to lift not only the 18 stone of the man jackling, but also the 18 stone dead weight on the floor.
Yeah, so I think the reason it doesn't get officiated that much is because a lot of superfluous stuff goes on at rucks. So you might dive into a ruck, but actually you've not affected... clear out, you've not affected, unless you're the contesting guy over the actual jackler or vice versa or whatever it is, then you can get pinged. But like a lot of lads coming from coming from all sorts of angles.
But that's why I like Tim's, it is oversimplification right now, but you can work with it. Simplify it so that everyone knows what they're looking at and it can be very easily called, because right now it is very complex and it's so inconsistent.
The two first players arriving, the jackler on the one side, the guy cleaning him out, higher or you're pinged.
How high?
Shoulders above hips.
Shoulders above hips. And actually supporting your own body weight.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be...
What do you think of players supporting jacklers?
What, like a kind of...
So that's like the... I mean, did you mention that? Is that what you were trying to say before?
No.
Yeah, so what you do is, the jackler comes over. So to prevent him having to support his weight, you basically come behind him. And
like a chariot.
Yeah, and you kind of grab him like underneath his weight.
Like you're doing a Heimlich.
Yeah, and therefore he's not going to... He's less likely to fall over. So he can get a nice steady position over the ball.
But then if you're pulling him back...
Well, he's already got a ball, hasn't he?
Here's the flip side. Me as an attacking player coming in to clean out my guy, if there was a guy jackling there, what I thought I would do, and if that was the law, I would do the pull him down.
Yep.
Just pull him forward down onto the deck. Like, he's off his feet,
these
sir.
These jacklers are so strong that I think quite often one of the few ways to do it is to almost come in slightly from the side and almost roll them. You've got to get them off their feet.
Well, that's why they're doing the crocodile roll. And it's why they're coming in from angles sideways and hitting low. That's exactly why, is because the jackler is allowed to be so low.
Well, yeah. I mean, and
you can't get a good shot on him. So, and the crocodile roll is a dangerous thing to do.
I've definitely mentioned this before on the podcast. Have you ever seen Sam Warburton's masterclass on Rugby Tonight about how you get rid of jacklers?
Yes.
Brutal.
Yeah.
So, there's two... He starts with the two things, okay? So, there's a ball-focused threat and there's a man-focused threat. So, the man-focused threat is... the ball focused threat is what you want. So you clear over the ball, you focus on a ball focused ruck. Yeah, it's fine, done, right? The second one is a man focused one. So you're a little bit late, there's a man coming for the ball, so you clear out the man. And the last one is like completely red alert. There's a guy onto the ball, what are you going to do? And he basically pinpointed like a 3-inch by 3-inch square, which is right on the spine of the opposition player, kind of between the shoulder blades. You go, see, you hit here as hard as you can.
Ugh.
And then you roll. I was like, okay, if I hit you there as hard as you can, it might hurt, might chafe a bit. If bloody, I don't know.
Tom Curry.
Sam Underhill comes flying in.
Mario Toji.
It's like, that can't be a thing you're actually being coached. But they don't care. They just want you off the ball.
But that 3-inch by 3-inch square, if the Jackal was properly refereed, it wouldn't exist because the hips can't be lower.
I wonder if we're looking at the same way.
Shoulders can't be lower than the hips.
So, I wonder if the way to solve this is not to say go high or go lower. It's something to do with the attacking side. So if the attackers are not over that ruck in a certain amount of time, basically what I'm trying to say is you always retain your ball if your guys are first to the ruck. So maybe you need to manipulate the laws to make sure that the attackers are there or there's no isolated men.
I don't like that.
Yeah, but
no, I understand. I do understand what you're saying.
But that is already the case.
You get a second, and that's it.
Unless only your scrum half is the first man there. If anyone else other than your scrum half is the first man there,
like what if,
you should secure 98% of your ruck.
This is just the first thing that came to mind, right? But what if the rule is as soon as a player, not the tackler, doesn't rip the ball, but just touches it on the ground, just to have the turnover?
Well, that makes it a bit easy.
Makes it a bit easy, but also means you've got to emphasise. Mind you, you'd be stopping it so often.
Yeah.
Unless you can clear up that, because that's what Glasgow were doing. Glasgow were like, we're not touching the ball, obviously, and expecting turnovers. That'd be ridiculous. But supporting players that quick that they never had to worry about jacklers. That was always their principle.
I love a good counter ruck, well timed as well.
Yeah. Well, they can still do that.
But because counter rucking is different from the jackal as well.
Yeah.
The other thing as well is like the continuity of these teams now is such that maybe stealing the ball in some way should be a bit easier.
Mm.
So if you can get two hands on the ball, that's a
I think at the moment, in that sense, in terms of the balance of going for a steal, competing at the ruck or not, which then creates space out wide for attacking players, I actually think that's not too bad at the minute. I remember a few years ago it was really bad where teams never bothered competing and they just fanned out and it became defence against attack, brick wall against brick wall.
Well, now teams do seem to have different tactics at different times.
Yeah, exactly.
So some teams will flood the breakdown at certain times, but also fan out at certain times. And that in itself is a skill, and there's an intelligence to identifying when to hit the rooks, identifying when not to.
Yeah. So, I mean, possibly the symposium could again go to just a convivial drinking session.
Yeah.
If they actually just went, right, I'll tell you what, referees, just apply the laws that are already in.
Yeah,
and then we'll get back together. Once you're actually applying the laws as they already are,
yes,
then we'll get back together and see if we need to change anything. But you're not doing it.
Perfect.
There you go. Let's get on the piss.
Let's go for a symposium.
Yeah. There was something else that was on my mind.
Six Nations?
Ndolo signed for Tigers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big. That's good.
Good, yeah.
He was listed as 137 kg.
Ndolo against Nairivoro next year in an East Midlands derby.
Woo! I think he's having to play centre, isn't he?
Well, he did play for Fiji in the centre, didn't he, in the previous 25.
Ndolo and Manu in the centre.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh my God.
In fact, I think that's why he's there. I think he's like a backup to Manu, because I know... I think Sale inquired about him as well for the same role to back up Van Rensburg. Now, exactly. I'm not sure if it's a good signing. I just don't think he's what he was.
Well, you will get...
Depends what they're paying him.
Yeah.
He'll be available when Johnny May's not.
But
he's not playing.
And when Manu's not.
Yeah.
So what's the toss-up here? You're going to play Kyle Eastmond or... Ndolo.
That could be the biggest differential in centre partnership height and weight of professional rugby ever.
Well, that'd be that's a good question, that. The biggest differential in centre partnerships.
Didn't Jason Robinson play centre for England a few times?
Yeah, he played for the team, actually, yeah. But who with? Tindall.
Might have been Tindall. That is fairly big.
Well, I actually think Bath recently was fairly big. Roberts and JJ.
Banahan, when he's played there, has that been one?
It could have been.
Banahan and Eastmond. Eastmond, maybe.
Yeah. That's not possible,
yeah.
No, mind you, Banahan's big. He's not 130 something.
No.
But he's 6'6" or 6'7", isn't he? He's certainly not, in terms of weight, he's certainly not 137 kg.
Mm.
Might have had a good Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, well, let's see. Let's see how he goes. I don't like it. I don't think it's a good. Can't see it being a good sign.
If
you're saying Sale, we're inquiring. If he'd have signed for Sale, you would not be saying, I'm not sure.
I have
about
no
that
views
signing.
On who Sale signed. I don't think it'd be a good signing for Sale. I, either. In fact, I'd rather have Sam Hill if I was going to choose one of them.
It's an interesting sign-in. He will, if you can get the best out of him for a couple of years.
How old is he?
32.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay.
Nairavoro's been all right.
Yeah, no, he's always been a raging success.
Not so much this week.
No.
But.
And he also, Nairavoro, for a winger, he doesn't sprint much, does he?
Nairavoro.
Yeah. Even when he's sprinting, he's not particularly sprinting.
Well, it's like watching an A380 land.
Yes, it's true. It's going much faster than you think.
Yeah, it's going a lot faster than you think. It's just too big.
When he's striding out, like, he doesn't look like he's going at full pace.
Yeah.
Can you imagine tackling him?
No. No, I can't. So there's a few things that you'd like to experience just to see what they feel like. So, one would be trying to tackle Nairavoro. The other one would be lifting Mauro Itoje in a line out. I think that'd be awesome.
If Nairavoro was running at you, what would your tactic be? I'm thinking, what sort of height? Because you don't want to go knee height, because he's going to just obliterate you.
I think knee height is by far your best option.
I'm thinking almost try and be like a road hump. Be like a stop him and just try and grab a foot on the way so he trips over.
So Bess Rutan, the MMA fighter, used to say he never used to get...
Bang, bang,
yeah,
that guy.
Bam! That was an awesome clip.
That is the best YouTube video ever. Baz Rutan, self-defense.
What do you say, like good night or something?
You two can't get it.
I think we're gonna find out.
So, I don't think so. Bam. Anyway, so he used to say, "Fight."
Hold on.
That I've been around. I've been a bouncer for many, many years. Bang, bang, bang. It's a street fight. Never look away from your opponent. Look, sir, I really don't want anything of this, and I go like this,
that's
and
knife.
I slit your throat, and it's over and out. Everybody underestimates the kick in the groin.
No one underestimates the kick in the groin. No one.
Just search Bass Rutan, RUTTEN Street Defense. It is my favourite YouTube video.
So Rutan would say, or Rutan or whatever his name is.
Rutan, yeah.
He would say there's two ways to he was losing a fight. He's either going to get submitted or he's going to get knocked out. So I don't think I want to feel the pain of Nairavoro hitting me. I'm going to go straight for his knees, leading with my head.
Oh, here's the one. Here's one.
I've been a bouncer for many, many years, and I've been fighting in the ring, as you know. So I know my things. Now, I was standing like this and talking to the guy, and suddenly, boom, a headbutt. Bang, follow up with a headbutt. Boom, knee to the head. And looky, look what we got here. Smack his face. Now, this is a very dangerous weapon
right here. It's the one that smash his face. Don't you?
That's the one.
I've got to find that now. I've got...
Bang, 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 bang. No, I'm not.
Deliver.
Boom. Boom. I'm sorry. Bang, bang, bang. No, hey, I'm
this
not.
This is a Thursday night at the Working Men's Club.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not. Oh, come on. Oh, yeah. Here we go. So he grabs a guy's head, bangs it into the table.
I'm sorry. Bang, bang, bang. No, I'm not. Bang, bang, bang. Don't you ever do that.
By the way, that guy asked where the cloakroom was. Where was the cloakroom? Bam! Bam! The guy's a fantasist.
Sorry, I don't know how and why. Sorry, Phil.
Where were we?
I went down a Baz Rutan rabbit hole.
Yeah, so how do you tackle Nairavoro? There you go. Yeah. I was giving you a list of rugby things that having a ball stolen from you by Tom Curry, getting tackled in heavy traffic by Sam Underhill, these sort of things.
That doesn't sound like much fun.
It's not, but it's experience.
Okay.
It's like climbing Kilimanjaro is not much fun.
Like drinking a Negroni.
Not much fun.
But kind of fun.
Kind of fun.
Fixtures next
week. Yeah, fixtures. Just rattle through the Premiership, then we'll...
Might come back with a Six Nations one, if there is any Six Nations to be played.
Okay. Friday night in the Premiership, we've got Worcester versus Northampton. Both desperate for a win.
Northampton, I think.
Northampton on that 3G.
without Dan Bigger. Oh, on the 3G, yes, yeah, good point. 4G.
4G, whatever it is.
5G now, you have to call it.
Yeah, 5G.
On the 5G, but it should really be 6G at Six Ways.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
It should be.
Got to upgrade.
On the 6G, I think it's going to be tight, that one. I think Northampton just.
Great.
I think Northampton, yeah.
Yeah, give me Northampton. And then we've got Sale hosting London Irish.
On Friday night?
Oh, we didn't talk about Wasps.
We didn't talk about Wasps. Oh, my God.
Wasps fans already hate me enough.
The game wasn't televised.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't, in fairness to us. The second game on Sunday is never an easy one to cover.
Fair play, Wasps.
Yeah.
Fair play. They have turned a corner. I mean, you could easily draw conclusions and go...
Yeah.
Dai Young's been moved aside, freshened things up, and by whatever means it's happened, something's clicked.
It seems so. You often do get this new manager bounce or change of personnel.
Do you think it happens
bounce.
In rugby, though? I don't think it happens in rugby that much.
I think it does. I think it does happen.
Just fire and hire someone all the time.
Yeah.
But then you always...
Every 6 weeks.
What about having six?
Trend to the mean. So you get this little bounce, and then it trends to the
normal
position.
You're not firing
enough,
then.
You need
I would have six coaches, low-paid average coaches, on rotation.
Well, Leicester did it. They had three coaches in one season, didn't they?
They did.
They had O'Connor, Major, and...
Cockle.
Cockers, yeah, of course. Cockrell, bloody hell.
And that was your idea. That was your idea with Eddie Jones. Your theory was Eddie Jones is always good for a year.
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah,
2 years. So hire him for 2 years, fire him, and then hire him again.
But you need to fire him mid World Cup cycle.
Yeah.
So he peaks at the.
Yeah, you.
The
yeah.
World Cup.
You want? Yeah. No, hang on. When do you want to get Eddie? You want to get Eddie Jones in a year before the World Cup?
Yeah.
And then Stuart Lancaster for the rest of it. Finish off the fixtures, please.
Sorry, Wasps.
We couldn't see it and we recorded too early. But well done.
Good win.
Look at, yeah. And
In what could have been another relegation battle, were there to be two relegations?
And they
year?
Have compressed the table even more. They're up into top six now. They're fifth, aren't they?
The table is massively compressed. I'm not getting in front of me.
I think
right
Wasps
now.
Are fifth now.
They're sixth on the table I'm looking at. But they are. 3 points off top four.
Two wins on the bounce, and who do they have? Sorry? Did you say London Irish?
Sale London Irish.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a home win.
Yeah, that will be a home win.
On Saturday, we have Saracens hosting Leicester. Saracens win. Even
yeah.
this Saracens second string.
Although they're so up and down.
Yeah.
How Saracens go from that beat down at Wasps to winning at Northampton?
Yeah.
But
I can't work out Saracens for the life of me. I think they're definitely the most interesting story in rugby. The shame of it is, they don't really want to share it with anyone. I don't blame them either.
But they'll beat Leicester.
Yes. Exeter host Bath, which would be an Exeter to win.
Yes.
Wasps host Gloucester. I would, if you'd have asked me this 4 weeks ago, I would have said comfortable Gloucester win.
I think Bath will beat him up.
Gloucester. Exeter.
Bath Sorry. I thought you said Gloucester.
No,
Bath go to Exeter. Bath Gloucester go to Wasps.
Travel to Exeter. Exeter are going to win that.
Yep.
Wasps host Gloucester.
Oh.
So, again, one thing I would say on Wasps, just to sort of elaborate on a discussion. So, Wasps, you know, if you're a Wasps fan, you're not too disappointed. We've not really talked about you. I would, in the same way as not having Willie Hines as a controlling factor really affects Danny Cipriani, having Jimmy Gopeth now... with enough game time under his belt and seems to be settled in, taking the kicking duties.
Yeah.
Possibly he is that controlling force that he used to be and was for Danny Cipriani at Wasps, and in a way that Willie Hines is for Danny Cipriani at Gloucester. Maybe, I wouldn't mind betting that Jimmy Gopeth is a key cog.
I would totally agree with that.
He has to be.
He has.
He has to be.
Yeah.
And Dai Young hasn't really had the benefit of Jimmy Gopeth.
I think Dai Young had enough of a chance, personally.
And yeah. If so, just when we were talking before about the single point of failure for Cipriani, if Gopeth is that key cog, Gopeth turns 37 in the summer.
Does he really?
He does. So,
but he hasn't had a lot of rugby in the last year or two. That might have prolonged his career a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, yeah. And he's
is pretty phenomenal.
He's never played internationally, but he's. I mean, he is still playing top draw rugby. So yeah, it would be a bit worrying. How many more years can you eke out of Gopeth?
How do you want to do a Six Nations one? Should we do it?
More game. We've got Bristol Quins on the Sunday.
That's going to be close. They're all going to be close. Bristol Quins.
Bristol at home.
Yeah, they'll be bouncing. Mind you, Quins.
Oh, did you see the Quins changing room?
Oh, yeah.
The picture Chris Robshaw posted. So it was Mark Lambert's 250th appearance for Quins. Special day. They got a win against Exeter, top of the table. They were very happy. There were loads of people, tops off, taking pictures, having a beer after the game. Chris Robshaw's picture. And on the roof of the changing room, it says...
Squeeze, suffocate, strangle.
Nice.
Defensive keywords, I guess. Squeeze, suffocate, strangle.
I assume so.
I wonder if they're going to get any...
Or is it... what was that guy that kept someone hostage?
Oh, no,
let's not even... Don't say the name.
Let's not go there. I do wonder if this is a cue for Harlequins to be handling rather large constrictor-style snakes now. I mean, maybe this... It was Wolfpack and now it's going to be... Constrictors?
The snake pack.
Snake pack.
Snake pack.
Snake ball.
Triple S.
What is a gang of snakes called?
Do you want me to look it up?
Yes, please.
Have a guess. What would it be? A sliver of snakes. A
ball?
Slither.
I think it is a snake ball.
What's the collective noun for snake?
Because there are multiple, actually.
So I know.
Well, what are some of them, then? We'll pick the best one for them to use.
Yeah, so I know garter snakes hang around in groups.
So the five that I've got in front of me.
Collective
noun for snake.
We've taken some brilliant little tangents tonight.
Den.
A den of snakes.
Den of snakes.
A snake den.
Snake den, okay.
A bed.
Snake bed. That doesn't sound too good.
A nest.
Sounds too sexual.
Ooh, nest.
Snake nest. Is quite
snake
good.
Nest. No.
A snake pit.
A viper pit.
Oh, snake pit. That's the one.
Viper pit.
And the final one is a knot of snakes. Which would be pit. An angry group of snakes if you tied them in a knot.
Pit.
Snake pit. There you go, snake pit defence.
The stoop snake pit.
I like it.
I say we reconvene in the week when we have the teams.
Well, England team will come out on Thursday.
Because of coronavirus, we could do it from our separate places.
I'll dial in.
We could Google Hangout it or whatever.
Quick predictions, because there is only two games this week.
So my very quick predictions are France batter Scotland, but not nearly as bad as England batter Wales, who will be ground to tiny, tiny bits of dust.
Don't underestimate Scotland in this one. I think going to Murrayfield is tough.
I'm happy to underestimate them. I'm very happy to underestimate them.
At your peril.
I see France winning, but really, I think Scotland's going to make it very difficult for them.
I tend to agree to that.
I think Scotland will roll over tamely. But not as tamely as Wales. I can't emphasise this enough.
I hope I'm at Twickenham.
A lot of their players have played this weekend, like Tompkins, for instance. Bigger, obviously.
Yeah.
The England boys have been rested, all wrapped up in cotton wool.
No damn bigger. Wales are going down.
The England boys in an Eddie Jones training
exactly.
Week.
No, sorry.
They'll be judo throwing each other. Courtney Laws will have two black eyes this week.
They've had Bas Rutten in.
Yeah. Bam, don't you do
bang,
this.
Bang, don't you ever do this.
Yeah, that is how England will treat Wales in Twickenham. It's going to be brutal. Looking forward to it, actually.
I can't wait. Cannot wait.
Right, wrap it up, Tim. Let's go home.
Right, thank you for listening. Hit subscribe, because there'll be another one coming in your feed before the Six Nations weekend. And... just subscribe anyway. Tell your mates. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, in the cesspit.
The snake pit.
Not the snake, in the snake pit of Twitter. JB is at JBeardmore. I'm at Cocker. And Phil will let you know when he wants to contact you, because he will find out. Slide into your DMs.
If you're lucky.
Let the boys play.
The boys play.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter.
Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.